It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I don't love junior mints. I just don't hate them. I don't understand why they are treated like second-class candy.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
You don't understand why a candy that is basically toothpaste wrapped up in stale chocolate is treated like a second-class candy. All right, I get it. It's a good, valid question.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Is there a time to change? You know, the three teams I've drafted this year, second-class candy is pretty good.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Well, here we go. Week one, the Bills and the Ravens, Sunday night. And when it's Baltimore, the man we call is Jeremy Kahn with us now on the Wester Hotline. Big Bad Morning Show in Baltimore at J-Con Sports. Jeremy, thank you, and I mean that sincerely. Are you ready to have another conversation about the same seven subjects we have every time we talk?
Yeah, man, it's always fun. It's kind of a doozy to start the season off with. And you look at getting this game out of the way one way or another, who comes out on top, and then you're kind of like, oh, I guess it's going to be a while before we see each other again.
Do you like it this way? I talked to our Sal Capaccio last week about that, and he was like more in the mood for a soft open, so to speak, you know, just
ease into it.
Last year, Arizona was here. It's nice to be, you know, one of these elite teams as we are. We can talk like that, but I don't know. There's something cool about this, too.
I guess I like a little bit of a mix. I mean, to be honest, football's been away for so long, it's like everybody's dying for it. You could have a bunch of crappy games and teams favored by, 7 to 10 points and watch those types of games. But, you know, it's kind of nice to see and look across the board. I think there's like 8 games that are within a field goal or something like that. Yeah. So should be a fun week. But and this is the icing on the cake. I mean, it's a huge game on Sunday Night Football.
Yeah. How much do you perceive Baltimore or the Ravens to have poured into this? It feels from a few hundred miles away over here, Jeremy. I'm not seeing constant reference to it, but I've seen a few different items where it's guys want to set the record straight and retribution and that kind of stuff. Like how burned by what happened last January do you think the Ravens feel still?
I think it's sad, and a lot of guys crawl, right? Like, there's a lot of players who are upset, and you had the whole offseason to think about it, and then you see him in game one. Like, you shouldn't need any added motivation for a week one NFL or any one of those games, but the human element comes in, and there are games you circle, and I think there's quite a few guys, and Mark Andrews probably being the main one, that had this game circled.
With Jeremy Kahn, I mean, again, always so many similarities between the Bills and the Ravens and the rides they've each been on for the last 5+ years. I mean, you do run the risk, to say the least here, of taking the regular season for granted with this attitude. But Jeremy, clearly both teams, what do they need to do differently to get there, execute in the playoffs? For the Bills, that's more on defense. For the Ravens, it's the turnovers, I would say. Maybe you'd say something else or something different.
No, it's turnovers. I mean, because those are the weird – they have a bunch of weird ones. They have the fumble through the end zone. You know, guys that have never fumbled fumbling and dropped 2-point conversions. We've seen it every which way, but it's definitely turnovers.
Yeah, so it's not like it's real work. But for us, it's sort of challenging sometimes to come up with – narratives, like the Bills and the Ravens will go about their offseason changes, and you can say anything you want about them, but really what matters is 4 months away, probably, unless it really goes off the rails. It's 4 months away, and it's these one or two plays. I find it tough to criticize the Bills for like sort of what they've built. I mean, even saying this now seems a little ridiculous. They've won the division 5 years in a row, but somehow they've got to figure out a way in Baltimore too to get into January and be buttoned up and just be better.
See, and I agree wholeheartedly with what you just said, because like realistically, the Bills should be a heavy favorite to win their division, even if they lose game one. I still think the Ravens should be a heavy favorite, because I don't even know who's on Cincinnati's defense this year. I mean, it just looks dreadful over there. Poor Burrow's arm's going to fall off from throwing it 50 times a game. And God knows what Aaron Rodgers is going to do to the Steelers. So like, I think the Ravens should be a heavy favorite to win this division. So it's not like a loss for either team really sets them back as much as you think. The Ravens would then come home and they get the Browns and the return of Joe Flacco to Baltimore. So I don't think it's a huge game in the grand scheme of things if they wind up with the same record or even close. Right. There's the tiebreaker for you.
Yeah, and that is the thing. The Ravens had their turn at that 2 years ago. We know how that went when they lost to the Chiefs in a very close game. The Bills have never had it, and that has been sort of the thing in the window as these seasons have started for the last, I'd say, 3-4 years now. You know, the first year of Josh Allen being like an MVP caliber player in 2020, I would say, we weren't really thinking about the one seed. We were just sort of happy to be, oh, look, they're relevant. They're on at night. Look, the Bills might be really good for a while. Now it's like, all right, get the thing that you haven't done yet. Right, that doesn't guarantee it, just like it didn't for Baltimore 2 years ago. But man, it'd be nice to get that extra week of rest and not have to play a third game.
There's no question, and I know like people don't like throwing it around, but for both teams, it always feels like Super Bowl for bust. You got your franchise quarterback, you know you have a window open, and you want to take advantage of it as much as possible. That's why it was funny in the offseason because Harbaugh said, I hear people saying it's Super Bowl or bust. Those are people that have never won a championship at any level. And I'm going, what else do you want us to say? I mean, you get so close and you don't get there. And again, like home field advantage and having it in a down year for the Chiefs when you guys ran all over them with 200 yards and the Ravens come out with the worst game plan in the history of game plans and still find a way to lose that game. But it's just, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, that's the next step they have to take. And it would be nice to see if you guys got home field throughout and how some of these teams would react to playing up there the same way it is here, because I know how loud our stadium gets and all the new features that they've put in. So postseason football is going to be fun this year, and I think we're going to have the usual suspects again.
Jeremy, how comfortable should Harbaugh be? I mean, I know there's a Super Bowl there, and like that gives you a certain amount of, you know, a little longer line of credit with the bank, if you will. But it's been now 8 years of Lamar Jackson, or this is year eight, just like Allen, excuse me, and they haven't gotten there yet. Like people here, I don't know, is there some Baltimore version? We always talk about these similarities. Is there some Baltimore version of 13 seconds that Harbaugh's carrying around in a satchel with him? Because 13 seconds is the flashpoint for every criticism of McDermott. It's not to say that there aren't varied and even very legit criticisms, but it starts there. And, you know, I just wonder, like, how similar that existence is with a coach that already has a Super Bowl, albeit, you know, a long time ago.
Oh, man, there's so many similarities there because there's a ton of spots we can bring up of what were you doing there, what were you thinking, even going back to when they were facing the Patriots in that Flacco era, and you're looking at it going, okay, the clock's running down, just call a timeout. No, I don't want to ice my kicker on a short field goal. And that's when we, you know, Cundiff became a term that people would use. You don't want to get Cundiff out in the middle of nowhere, you know. So I think you go back to Harbaugh, and it's a lot of clock management stuff. And I don't mind the aggressiveness. I love analytics and understanding that it's just information. You do with it what you see fit. It's just giving you odds and percentages of what you should do. But I do think there has to be some sort of feel to it. And when they won in 2012 – I mean, that I don't even know if people remember this nationally, but at one point there was this thing that people were doing in Baltimore called Flaccoing after he threw a pick six in the Denver game and he was laying down face first. So there were like viral videos going around here of people, quote unquote, Flaccoing. So you got a quarterback that got hot and threw 11 touchdowns and no picks in the postseason. It was an amazing run, but by no means was that a Super Bowl caliber team at the beginning of the year. They just got hot at the right time. And I think he's been riding that all the way up into this Lamar Jackson league because, you know, he put all his chips in the middle after drafting him and benching Joe Flacco midway through the season, and they end up making the playoffs. But he's been riding on that for a while, and at some point it's got to pay off in the end game because everybody here thinks they've had the best team on paper the past 3 years.
Oh, for once to get hot at the right time around here. Like that would just that'd be cool. Even a couple of years ago, Jeremy, when the Bills – ended up 11-6. It's the year of the Ravens being the one seed, but it was a bumpy year for the Bills, and you would still hear people say, no, this is really better because like the Manning Colts didn't best season. Yeah, right. It's just sort of like the adversity would help them, and I guess I have to listen to that. Well, we've covered some of the past and even looked to the future. In the present, this game, how are the Ravens different for this game than when they were last year?
So, look, I don't want to sound like a broken record sometimes with this, but their roster is loaded. They actually had three undrafted free agents make their roster. They cut players that were supposed to be a big part of the rotation because they saw something in these young guys. I mean, if Jair Alexander's back there, you have five first-round picks in your secondary. The kid they drafted, Mike Jones, it's one of the worst kept secrets, I think. He's if he didn't have his allegations off the field, that guy would have been a top 10 pick, top 15 pick, and he looks like he's going to be an amazing pass rusher. So they've added on that side of the ball. They've solidified their offensive line. You had questions at guard. You bring in Hopkins as kind of a veteran receiver, third down, red zone stuff. I just feel like they have depth everywhere, and this team looks good overall. And the kid Tyler Loop that's coming in, he looked great ever since his first week in camp. So I feel like the team is loaded. This is a team that should be poised to take that next step, but I'm sure you guys feel the same way up in Buffalo.
Mike Green, the second-round pick, edge rusher, linebacker, edge rusher from the Ravens. They've got a couple other guys. Owa, who's been around. I know there was a guy. Is it Owa or Ojabo who missed a season?
Yeah, Ojabo missed a season. Kyle Van Noy's still here.
Yep.
And we were just talking about it. He had 12.5 sacks last year. This scheme is so great for guys if you are one of those lunch pail guys that will go to work.
So Trey White is here. He was on the field for Baltimore in that playoff loss to the Bills. And he's iffy for this game. I think in terms of the Bills, like the secondary is the concern, if there is one, about this team. Trey White didn't practice today. Maybe plays Sunday night, but maybe not. He was hurt a couple of weeks ago. There are questions at safety.
Benford's a little dinged up too. So
they put Keon Coleman on the injury report
right,
today too, with a groin injury.
Yeah.
So the Bills aren't in perfect shape for this game.
Yeah, with the Ravens, I mean, the likely stuff was the key thing. Wondering when he's going to come back, and they didn't put him on IR, which leads you to believe it may not be this week, obviously, but maybe we're looking at the home opener or week three against the Lions. But yeah, with Jair getting off of the injury report and practicing, I think that means he's going to play on Sunday.
What is the importance of Isaiah Likely? I hear many things about him. I'm a fantasy player, and there are people in fantasy who think he's, you know, a weapon waiting to burst as a tight end, one in the league, and then others who maybe are more negative toward him. I mean, the Ravens with Andrews and Likely are kind of an unusual matchup, but if no Likely in this game as expected, what will that mean?
Yeah, I mean, the Ravens love going to a lot of 12 and 22 personnel and having two tight ends out there. And with Isaiah Likely, though, I mean, look, I've watched this guy play and watching the league for a long time and being a fantasy player. If he was tight end one, he could easily be the best tight end in the league. Now, it's going to be tough to be that here in Baltimore because there's so many mouths to feed. And let's be honest, everything's going to be predicated off the run with Derrick Henry back then. So I think you may have seen it in week one last year when they threw like a little swing pass to him and he took it 55 yards of the house against the Chiefs. He's one of those guys that's freak of nature. I think like Darren Waller type. He can run over you and he can run by you. So I do feel like if he gets that tight end one opportunity, that it's a guy that could put up big time numbers.
But he is expected to miss this game, right? And
that's, yeah, I mean, he tweeted out something that was weird, some sort of a stopwatch picture. I don't know what the hell it was about, but all these guys are being very vague on social media.
Right.
And everybody's like, is he playing or not? But he was out on the field today, but he wasn't practicing.
Okay. The other injury that I think is notable, I don't know, this might be the first time I've ever asked a guest like you, Jeremy, about a fullback, but Ricard is such a weapon and such a unique player and gives them so much variety formationally. And he's nursing something. Do you think he goes?
Yeah, I mean, they're saying it's this whole thing where they're very secretive with injuries and calling it like a soft tissue issue. So in my mind, that probably means hamstring or quad or calf or something. But they haven't really come out and said what it was. And you're right. So they do have options. We actually had the question this week, would it be worse if they're missing Jair Alexander or Patrick Ricard? And a lot of us felt Ricard. There is a kid on the practice squad they could call up, but it's very hard to replace the production that guy brings. I mean, he literally, when he got in the league, was playing defensive tackle and playing fullback / tight end. So, and he just loves pancaking guys on the other side, and he just eats it up. So he's one of those guys that you come from a blue-collar city, you're going to fall in love with him. So I don't know if he's going to go, but he did not practice.
With Jeremy Kahn, so if this is a different – I'm not sure this is a necessarily different answer than talking about the team at large, but Lamar Jackson and Jeremy, the discourse around him – after another great season, but the hiccups in the playoff loss. I mean, there used to be real skeptics about him, and that would frustrate me, and I'm not even there, but that would frustrate me to listen to. Has that completely dried up, or do those people cling to his mistakes?
Well, there's still some people that are going to be stubborn, and you hear it here in Baltimore that, like, I don't like this style. I'd prefer a guy to sit back there, drop back 40 times, and throw the football. It was nice to hear that, like, Bill Polian apologized, saying that he would only draft him as a wide receiver, and after you win two MVPs, I guess that's what happens. but, you know, like, you look at a couple of the things of – you can understand why people initially weren't big on it. You were seeing some weird throwing motions, missing receivers, trying to get better at the deep ball. And it was almost like when Happy Gilmore learned how to putt. I mean, once he kind of got into rhythm and figured it out, he was going to be a problem. And he's one of the most – look, I was a Peyton Manning truther, and I see a lot of similarities in he can't win the big one type thing. Mm-hmm. And when you finally do, we'll see if you get credit for it, or did you beat a subpar team and nobody wants to say, hey, yeah, you finally won the Super Bowl. But he's got to get there at some point to solidify his career.
Yeah, that's so true.
Narratives are very sticky. Yeah, my experience talking about Peyton Manning in this room, Mike and I have been in here together for over 20 years, Jeremy, and so we ran really his whole career. After he beat the Colts beat the Patriots, and then they won the Super Bowl, the next year it felt like people still didn't think Peyton Manning could ever win the big game.
It didn't happen.
Like we reverted to, Bears, T. Martin won a national title at Tennessee and he couldn't. Like it just sticks to you. It just people don't want to let go. Yeah.
And it's hard to get rid of. Even when you Peyton Manning has a winning record against Tom Brady in the postseason. That may not mean much to people, but when you start throwing things around, it's like. Yeah, I mean, I understand that things weren't great, but actually go watch the last 2 minutes of a lot of those playoff games and see the defense giving up, you know, what was a game-winning drive beforehand. So there's a lot of things you can look at, and I'm not saying he's not devoid of blame, but
sure.
I hated seeing that, and I'm seeing with Lamar now.
Reminds me of golf almost, where John Feinstein's book, The Majors, his first chapter is about how, yeah, winning one is great, but you really need to win two. And once you win two, and Manning eventually did win a second with Denver, but we were all sort of fixated on how bad he looked.
Right.
Like he was shot putting the football at that point. I think he had it behind his ear and just trying to get down the field.
It was about, for the first half or so of his career, it was about, well, actually, you know, it's a team game, and then he wins on the heels of the Denver defense and, you know, everything else that happened before that. Like, well, you know, now we're just going to look at it from a different angle.
We have kind of hopped all around here, Jeremy, but I want to hear you talk a little about the receiving core here. I mean, we covered the tight ends, and we know about Andrews, and likely he's not likely to play. Sorry, not trying to be cute, but what are we talking about at receiver here this year? And like, is there somebody ready to take a step?
Yeah, I mean, look, Zay Flowers, he wasn't in the postseason game last year, and he's a guy that Lamar's kind of built a great rapport with. I do think you're going to see a heavy dose of Mark Andrews in this game. Just because he's going to soak up all those opportunities. You have the backup tight end, Charlie Kohler, who they don't throw too often, but every once in a while there'll be a wrinkle in there. I think you'll see D-Hop as that third wide receiver. He's looked good in camp. You know, he's Father Time's caught up to him, but I still think he has a decent catch radius, and we could see him in some red zone and third down type options. And when you look at the other guy, Rashad Bateman, man, it's something to watch those guys work together because he and Lamar weren't on the same page. And last year, it finally kind of came together. And Zay Flowers and Rashad Bateman, two of the best receivers at separation in the league. So they have options there. It's a nice group. And now there's even depth with the kid Tez Walker they drafted a few years ago and Tylan Wallace.
Not to mention Derrick Henry is on this team.
Right.
My most drafted Ravens player, I think, would be Keaton Mitchell. Because he has just been so efficient and explosive, and he seems all the way back. I mean, he was hurt 2 years ago, and then last year didn't happen. But he had moments this preseason. Do you think, like, does he come in over Justice Hill? Do you think Baltimore will use Mitchell in this game?
So I think Mitchell will get a few touches a game. But honestly, like, I was saying this to somebody else, and the reason why I love grabbing Keaton Mitchell at the end of drafts is because if something happens to Derrick Henry or if he misses a period of time, I still think Justice Hill stays in his same role, gets a few more carries, a few more touches, but ultimately Keaton Mitchell is the guy that's going to get those touches. And you're right, he's so explosive. He's so small, though, so it's the one thing you worry about is how many hits he's going to take, but he's clearly a guy that could take it to the house any given moment.
Is there anything, before we let you go, Jeremy, is there anything about this Bills team from the Ravens' perspective that you think can be exploited? I mean, in that playoff game, the Bills, what were they, 4 yards per play? Like, Allen's numbers are super small, but they get the win with the help of those turnovers. Is it a matchup where you think that can happen again? I think Baltimore would take that kind of defensive performance in this game Sunday.
Oh, absolutely. And look, I think the Ravens are going to be a top five offense, top five defense this year. And again, but the one thing that keeps getting brought up in Baltimore is how Derrick Henry's bigger than all the linebackers and Patrick Ricard is as big as most of the linemen. So it's always a thing where, whether it's bullish or not, everybody thinks that the Ravens are going to come in and just bully their way and run all over smaller fronts. But you look at some of the schemes and things of what's happened in years past, and like what happened in the postseason game last year. Why wasn't it better than that? So I think that's something that you're always going to look forward to, is a heavy dose of Derrick Henry. And since it's an opening night game, maybe he gets a few more touches than what you'd expect.
Very good. Well, thanks for your time as always. It should be a great season, and who knows, maybe we'll reach out again in January.
Yeah, awesome, man. I'd love to do it again.
All right. Thanks again, Jeremy.
Guys.
Jeremy Kahn out of Baltimore at JCon Sports. Bills and Ravens Sunday night on NBC, Peacock, Universo, Telemundo.
It's a big umbrella.
How many channels do you need for one show? Four?
Four. Did you name four? I think four.
Maybe I think the Eagles game is on Telemundo, but the Bills game is on Universo.
Okay.
Those are different. Do you know that their studio show, you love it, Jason Garrett, Maria Taylor, Tony Dungy?
I thought Garrett had a very strong year last year.
Really?
Yeah.
Come on.
I swear to God, I don't know what happened. It felt to me like he had a meeting and a light went on.
Wow, I'm going to have to watch for that.
Yeah, he was a different human being.
See, this is good because
end of last season.
We're criticizing people for not changing their tune on Peyton Manning, and now like here's somebody you're showing you're able to do that.
I just thought he was way more personable and relatable.
Okay.
Late in the season last year on that show.
This is more interesting than what I was going to say. I was going to say that did you know those shows emanate from Stanford, Connecticut? They're not in New York. They used to be.
I think I've heard them say something about that.
Though they have a big New York backdrop.
Yeah.
But they're in Connecticut. A lot of that.
Yeah.
That's New York kind of outreach into Stanford.
It's the metro area.
I saw Andy Pettit out in Stanford one night. Oh, I guess this is right. New York, I guess. I'm right. Still, yep. I'm still there. I thought I'd driven an hour east, but whatever.
I do watch that show every Sunday. Every time. Like the 4 o'clock games end and, you know, Red Zone goes dark. Okay, I'm heading over there.
I'll head over there, but I won't sit down and watch it. This is when I got my steps in on a Sunday.
Sure. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not sitting there with
my only chance.
I'm not like Howard Simon with a yellow legal pad taking notes or anything. But it's on, and you know, I'm also in and out making dinner or whatever. But it keeps me company.
Shots fired. Does anybody still say shots fired? 803-0550, Sal at 5, Bills and Ravens Sunday night. What do you expect? Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, WGR.
You know, Cole, like I mentioned before, is continuing to grow, and you know, we see growth every day. He goes through new experiences, and then playing with T-Rap back there in the tandem that you have to be and become is important, and you learn from each other. Obviously, Cole learning probably a little bit more from T-Rap than the other way around, but that's an important duo, and they have to form their own identity.
Sean McDermott earlier today, the Bills faced the Ravens to open the 2025 season Sunday night on Universo, among other channels. I might just watch it on Universo. One of the Sunday night games in the last while, I did watch on a Spanish-speaking station in non-high definition because there was some sort of a contract dispute.
Oh.
DirecTV, Channel 2, or NBC, I don't know. Like, it was not Pittsburgh.
You didn't have the game in the normal place.
Right. Home Pittsburgh. And I watched it on Universo, maybe, or Telemundo. What? I don't know the difference. One of those. It ended in an O. And so, you know, that happened. Would have liked the high def factor.
Sure.
Did you hear?
It's hard to even imagine watching a sporting event in like regular definition television.
Can you believe we ever did?
I can't. No, actually, I find it hard to believe.
Can you believe we ever had to take that little dial when it was only kind of coming in and just to try to get the lines to go
fine-tuning.
Away.
Right.
Last week, I had some fun with NBC sending out a press release about this is the 20th season of their Sunday Night Football package. And they sent out all kinds of stats.
Okay, you love that.
I love that. And it turns out that the team with the best winning percentage on Sunday Night Football since 2006 when NBC bought it is the Bills. Hey, 9-3.
All right.
Does that surprise you?
It surprises me that someone hasn't done more than that because the Bills got a late start. Like they really didn't start getting on that program until 2020. So it says a lot that they've had 12 games. I know they're not all since then. There was the one with the, but you know, it's one of the three. The Patriots.
They're all the two.
Right. What is the other one?
19 at Pittsburgh.
Oh, 19 at Pittsburgh. Okay.
Which was such a great night. Because my Al Michaels fixation, it wasn't in Buffalo, but it was close. He was doing a Bills game on NBC. Was it not flexed in that game in Pittsburgh? Maybe?
I think it was.
And we played a highlight the next day from that Bills win in Pittsburgh, and it was Al Michaels calling the touchdown pass to Tyler Croft. And I may never forget that. I might always hear his voice announcing Tyler Croft scoring a touchdown for the Bills in that game. Devlin Hodges. They had to beat Devlin Hodges to do it, but they did. The Pittsburgh starting quarterback.
Devlin Hodges.
9-3.
Not Devin, Devlin. Okay.
Devlin. All Duck right. Hodges. It includes the 07 beating by the Patriots, one.
Mm-hmm.
The Bengals loss 2 years ago on Sunday night.
Right.
And the Ravens last year. In week four, but they have 7 Sunday night wins and the Rams win on the Thursday night opener, which counts, and the New Orleans Thanksgiving win.
Well, that was also
which also would count.
Yeah.
NBC.
Right. Yeah.
9-3. Best in the league.
Yeah, I'd just surprised like Pittsburgh or Dallas or somebody that was on 3 times a year at least for the entirety of Sunday Night Football existing doesn't have, you know, a better record.
Dallas's problem is having been on 61 times versus our 12.
Right.
I think that hurts them. But
so I want to make sure I got this straight. 9-3 is the best winning percentage?
Yes.
It's not the most wins.
No.
It's not the most wins. Right. Okay.
Just
because I'm
best rate.
I'm sort of tangling myself up there. I'm taking a different path.
9-3.
Okay. All right. Gotcha.
That will change on Sunday.
Did you see the news today that the Red Zone channel is going to feature commercials for the first time ever?
I did. I hate it.
I thought it was funny that I found that out today because today was also the day that I went looking through our, well, I think you still have the same streaming provider. I went in there. I've loved having that. I never had the Sunday tickets. Or I never had Red Zone. So when I got Fubo for the first time, I had the Red Zone channel. And then with all the changes and YouTube and who knows what, it's like, I haven't looked. Is this going away? Do I still get this? Oh, good. I still do.
Good.
Nice. It's, you know, if I'm getting a little bored watching the two New York teams at 1 o'clock this Sunday, I know I can go to Red Zone and just hang out and watch that for a while. But commercials.
Well, it's the principle of it. And it's just like seemingly everything else in the world. Like what was the point of Red Zone?
You don't have to hop around. You're going to see nothing but scores. You're going to see nothing but action.
Right. You pay for it. You pay extra.
Right.
In this case, through Fubo, but also through Sunday Ticket, which is really expensive. You pay the extra to be able to avoid the commercials. And now you've already paid the extra. And guess what? The season starts Sunday. Guess what?
And
surprise.
They're doing whatever they want because they can.
ESPN has bought it. It's just very depressing. So many things. Just
really,
the same.
Yeah,
really. How do you like the NBA thing today?
Oh, the thing about the Clippers, the fake jobs?
Yeah. I will not apologize for my extremely cynical attitude about this. I saw that the Clippers, according to Pablo Torre, made up a bogus job for Kawhi Leonard at a rate of $28 million a year as, you know, funded by their owner to be able to fit him in under the cap. And my reaction was, they all do that. Which I guess it can't really be considered fair to say. But I tweeted to a friend, Watch how many owners decry this development. None. Who's going to say it?
Right.
Maybe you get somebody like super self-righteous like Mark Cuban or somebody like that. It'll be like, oh, this is an outrage. Nobody's going to do that because they're all, I mean, what if we, it's more hockey than football, I would say, over the years. But, you know, tampering, and then it was legal tampering and all the different, you know, oh, we can't, sorry, I forgot. We can't really talk to you until noon. Then the contract's announced at 12:02. Like, just there's so many I just feel like they're all doing it. You know, and you see, who was it that I was thinking about? Maybe it was Pete Carroll. Because there was a lot about Pete Carroll, like, last week with the Raiders. He's back in the NFL and thinking about SC and college was back last week. And he just sort of, like, want to just be able to like it. But then, you know, USC, and there's worse examples probably, Harbaugh in Michigan.
Right.
They just win, and then we go through this very small phase that nobody wants to really talk about or listen to because usually maybe they can't even understand it. Is like, well, here's why there were illegalities, and here's what happened. And then, like, all right, where's the next game? When is the next
right.
game?
Right. No, yeah, it's entirely disposable. Like, it becomes – it's not controversial at all. And it probably it should be, but it's the machine. It is the machine of not just football, but largely it's football that just keeps going. We crave it so much that we don't want to dwell on anything that, you know, calls into question how fair it is.
And what happens to Jim Harbaugh? Nothing.
No, of course.
He goes to the NFL. That's what Pete Carroll did.
He beats the posse out of college and goes back to the NFL, and he's lauded and celebrated.
He'll never have to really suffer for it.
No.
You know, whatever the extent of the wrongdoing was.
It's so bad, and I feel bad for the people in those jobs. And I'm thinking mostly of college football for this, although that landscape has changed radically now with the money that's being thrown around now, legally, you know. But every college coach I see on TV, I think, oh, I can't stand this guy.
I know.
And it's same. Like, oh, I can't stand this guy. It's like Dabo Sweeney against Brian Kelly. Oh, my God, shoot me in the face. I can't get a side here. Thank God for gambling. I don't know what to do. I despise both of these people. I don't know them at all. I just, they've had moments in front of microphones that have made me think, I don't like you. I don't like the way Brian Kelly with the fake Southern accent when he first got to LSU was one of the most embarrassing things that's ever happened in humankind. And it's 3 years later, and he's still coaching LSU, and like they won, so everything's great. But oh my God, it was a clown show when he got there. Like, what are you doing? And I realize, like, there's a lot more that goes into molding the lives of these young people that the coaches are responsible for. But you show up in Baton Rouge and start talking like you grew up on the bayou, you sound like an idiot.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Sorry, I'm jumping around here. But, like, the college coach, the figure.
I don't even like my team's coach. Stop dyeing your beard. Look at me. Look at us in here. We're real people, real men. With beards, I need a trimmer. I thought I would be able to walk into a drugstore today because my trimmer died.
Mm.
And believe it or not, I had one.
You keep that thing pretty tight.
No, I hate it now. It's too itchy.
Yeah,
it's long overdue. So I made the trip today to get it, and it was not available.
Mm.
So I don't know where to go now.
I don't trim my beard at home. I go to see Oral Roberts. It's unruly for me. I'll come in here and I'll have a mustache if I try to trim my beard.
That's what I did. Like,
I gotta even it out. This is for everybody on the Twitch. Next thing you know, I got no beard. That's what would happen if I started trimming my beard. Because I'd be like, it's not symmetrical. A little more. Ugh.
I can probably go to like a big store. They would have these things. Like $30-$40.
Probably, yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to have to do it because this is not happening.
I got one that I never use.
Could you use another man's beard trimmer?
I don't think so.
Like bathing suits.
Yeah.
I know what I could do. Shaving cream, razor.
Take it down to the wood. All right.
Got to trim it first. Yeah. I can't do that from here.
Yeah, no.
I'm just going to have to live with it until I trim it first. All right, got around a little bit. Sal Capaccio at 5, Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.